Mugabe's legacy in the light of eternity. We read in Hebrews 9 verse 27, it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment. To some, the doctrine of eternal judgment is a great comfort, especially for the persecuted church, because we may not receive justice on earth, but we do receive justice in eternity. But to others, it's a terrifying concept, as it should be. It is a fearful thing to fall in the hands of the living God. The world was informed that the longest ruling dictator in Africa, Marxist terrorist Robert Mugabe, died in a hospital in Singapore. Now, how various people reacted to this news speaks volumes. DA leader Mamusi Maimane sent his condolences to the family of former president, capital P, president Robert Mugabe. Is the DA democratic? I mean, did they think he got elected? May his soul rest in peace, said Muzimani. Now, Muzimani claims to be a Christian, he even claims to be a pastor, and a Democrat, yet he called the brutal dictator president and assumed that his soul will rest in peace. Now, D.A. Muzimani also described Mugabe as a liberator. Now, you wonder where Maimane has been since 1980. Has he not noticed the tragic destruction of our neighboring Zimbabwe under the despotic tyranny of ZANU and Mugabe? I mean, just look at what these people are saying here. Mugabe's starving his own people. Mugabe's a liar. We want jobs in Zimbabwe and so on. And Mugabe's a liar, just in case you missed the first one. He's called a liberator, but the Zimbabwe National Army is not exactly liberating anyone. The eulogies from leaders praising Robert Mugabe are in sharp contrast to the celebrations in Zimbabwe over the demise of the Marxist dictator who promised him paradise and who delivered perdition. David Coulthard made an interesting observation on a BBC radio program where they asked his reaction. He says, well, all the praises from Mugabe are bound to be coming from outside Zimbabwe, but not much from inside unless the people are members of the ZANU ruling party. 2 Peter 2 verse 19 could be written over many dictators, especially Mugabe. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. The fake leaders and the fake news reports speak of a guerrilla leader, a hero, who liberated his people from colonialism, who instituted land reform. These are the buzzwords, these are the mantras that you're hearing over and over. Audacious, outrageous, deception and dishonesty are pervasive. The lamestream media, they call themselves the mainstream, but they're the lamestream media, have again disgraced themselves as the purveyors of fake news and Marxist propaganda. How can you take the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, Slime Magazine, the Clinton News Network, Newspeak, and Useless News and World Report seriously when they keep coming out with mindless Marxist propaganda like this? EFF leader Julius Malema, not surprisingly, called Mugabe a hero, a liberator, and a perfect human being. President Emmerson Mnangagwa praised Mugabe as an icon of liberation. Wait a minute, isn't that the same Mnangagwa who overthrew him and replaced him in a coup? If he is so great, why did they replace him? It is with the utmost sadness that I announce the passing on of Zimbabwe's founding father and former president, Comrade Robert Mugabe. I think the only true word in that entire statement from Mnangagwa is comrade. Mugabe was a comrade. And so said the new dictator who seized power from his previous leader in the 2017 coup. How's that for hypocrisy? By the way, you see this ivory on each side of his throne? Incredibly, Mnangagwa described the deceased dictator as a national hero. Comrade Mugabe was an icon of liberation, a pan-Africanist who dedicated his life to the emancipation and empowerment of his people. His contribution to the history of our nation and continent will never be forgotten. Oh, that's probably true. May his soul rest in eternal peace. What? Wait a minute, you've got a communist asking for another communist soul to rest in eternal peace? Calling Mugabe a great teacher and mentor and a remarkable statesman of our century, Mnangagwa instituted an official period of mourning, which is quite extraordinary considering there was national celebration when he was removed from power. Riddled with so many lies and hypocrisies, this is worthy of study to refute every single phrase. Facts can really ruin a good story. Marxists do not believe a man has a soul, nor do they believe in eternal peace. They believe in economic determinism, materialism. If you can't see it and touch it, it doesn't exist. They don't believe in a soul. Mugabe's actual contribution was tyranny, brutality, cruelty, massacres, starvation, corruption, hyperinflation, systematic destruction of a once safe, stable, productive country that used to be self-sufficient, even exporting food, during a war, during droughts, during famines, with international sanctions, and they were still exporting food. Mugabe turned this breadbasket to a disastrous basket case, a basket state, beggar nation, dependent on foreign aid and charity to even survive. In what sense did he empower and serve and emancipate his people? This is what land reform looks like in Zimbabwe. Yep, nothing working or growing. At independence, so-called, in 1980, Mozambique's Samora Machel and Tanzania's Julius Nyerere actually warned Robert Mugabe, don't make the same mistakes we made. They urged him, respect property rights and let the Europeans continue to contribute to the economy. Incredible. I didn't think that Nyerere had learned a thing, and I certainly didn't think Michel had, so their advice is quite extraordinary. Interestingly enough, it was Thabo Mbeki at the memorial service they held, was it just yesterday in Durban, for Mugabe. Thabo Mbeki praised Mugabe endlessly, including for the fact that he delayed his land reform, so-called policies, for over 10 years until we had, because he was going to institute in 1990, and the ANC and Nigerians and others persuaded Mugabe to hold off another 10 years until the transfer of power has been secured in South Africa and they've consolidated the revolution, because otherwise the Boers would never trust them with the country. So Mugabe self-sacrificed and he held back the second phase of the revolution for more than 10 years, and he's awfully grateful. Now, I've heard Mbeki say this before, 20 years ago actually. And so, and at the time we drew people's attention to it, about the deception operation, how all these communists really worked together. In Zimbabwe, the second phase of the revolution was launched approximately 20 years after the signing of the Lancaster Agreement, which led to the transfer of power and the guarantees, internationally guaranteed guarantees of private ownership property being respected, the rule of law, separation of powers, legal safeguards entrenched. With the United States of America, Great Britain, the Organization of African Unity, the UN, a whole bunch of others guaranteeing the Lancaster House Agreement that this will be observed. Despite massive foreign aid from Britain, America and the EU, Mugabe's ZANU government failed to provide the vast amount of land at their disposal to be productively farmed. The vast majority of land in Zimbabwe has always been owned by the government, and they didn't allocate the land in their power to the people who wanted land. The issue wasn't land reform. The issue was looting the farms that were productive and destroying them. In order to distract their citizens from the gross failure of government, they blamed the economic woes of the country on the white farmers and unleashed a wave of violent farm invasions, which led to the total collapse of Zimbabwe's economy and the worst hyperinflation ever seen in history. $1,072,418,003,000,000 only. Who's got a calculator that can handle this? It became difficult to measure Zimbabwe's hyperinflation because the government of Zimbabwe stopped filing official inflation statistics. However, by November 2008, inflation was estimated at 79.6 billion percent. I mean, how can you even calculate that? One brick in 2008 cost more than every house, business, farm, and property in all of Zimbabwe in 1980 at so-called independence. Even after deleting 16 zeros from the currency, a $100 trillion note in 2008 could not even buy half a loaf of bread. And so you had these sort of so-called checks and Reserve Bank going from 10, 20, 50, $100 trillion, but this couldn't buy you half a loaf of bread, not even a quarter of a loaf of bread. Is worth nothing. And that's after having dropped 16 zeros off the currency.
They're also
That's right. Yeah, so there were actually coupons instead of even notes. So you could be a starving billionaire in Zimbabwe. In fact, every billionaire would be starving because a billion's nothing. And in fact, this is worth a lot more than that, and that's worth a lot more than that too. So by 2009, Zimbabwe abandoned their own currency. What a disgrace for any country. They don't even want their own money back. And they began demanding that you paid at the border post or anywhere else with US dollars, South African rand, and Botswana pula. What government doesn't want their own currency? That's a real vote of no confidence. And when Paul wrote about filthy lucre, this is probably not what he's thinking about, but this is filthy lucre. The dollar notes were just passed around and around and around. You don't know how much disease was on it because this was the only currency. They had nobody wanted their own currency. In fact, we've seen signs in the toilets in Zimbabwe not to use Zim dollars in the toilet. And the poor people queuing to get, how much can they get a day? $20, maybe? How are you meant to run a business? How are you meant to do anything with that kind of restriction? The national suicide of Zimbabwe under Mugabe's dictatorship led to more than half of the total population fleeing the country. Unemployment rocketed to over 90% of those left behind the country. It reached 95%. So when more than half the population vote with their feet, if you're not allowed to really vote in the elections, the only vote they had left was voting with their feet. In other words, fleeing the country. That's a real vote of no confidence in Mugabe, ZANU, PF-ruled failed state. They fled the endemic corruption, the brutality in Zimbabwe to neighboring countries. There are more Zimbabweans outside the country than there are in the country now. Mugabe was never dedicated to emancipating and empowering the people of Zimbabwe. What kind of liar could say that his heritage is that he sought to empower and emancipate the people of Zimbabwe? Mugabe must be one of the most corrupt, self-serving, and selfish leaders in history, and certainly one of the greatest failures in all of history. By the way, this is Mugabe's kaya, just one of his little kayas out there. Kaya's a word in the belly for home, and he is obviously a comrade, and like all good communist comrades, they believe that they must live more like Roman emperors while the rest of the people live in hovels. So this is what it means to be a communist. You loot the country, and this looks just slightly on the extravagant side. Jacuzzi with, yeah, and telephones and so on. Yeah, I mean, a lot of TVs all over the place. And, of course, your swimming pool. And he lived in such opulent decadence, feasting on giraffe meat, lion meat, and elephant meat, while his destitute people starved. Mugabe enslaved, and he disempowered the people of Zimbabwe, that the people were left eating rats. Destitute, living in squalor, destroyed, no future, no food, no farmers, and foreign aid. About the only hope for their people. And some bleeding heart do-gooder, liberal, Peace Corps worker from America comes to feed them. Where's the dignity and empowering in that? This is what Mugabe did for his people. And it's absolutely reprehensible that people can praise such a one as that. Yet ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa described the despot as a champion of Africa's cause against colonialism, who inspired our own struggle against apartheid. Well, first of all, there never was apartheid in Rhodesia, but Mugabe never fought against colonialism because Rhodesia was not a colony. In fact, Rhodesia was never a colony. Rhodesia was a self-governing country from 1923. In fact, from 1890, it paid for its own way always. The British South Africa Company and the British South Africa Police provided everything, their own defense. Britain didn't provide a soldier, a pound, a penny to the building up of Rhodesia. Rhodesia was self-governing from 1923, independent from 1965, a republic from 1970. The people who fought against colonialism were people like Ian Smith, who broke the ties with Britain. Rhodesia wasn't a colony. And from the very beginning, it provided its own security. It was self-supporting, never needed British funding, never needed British troops. It never needed any foreign aid, even when being sanctioned and attacked by terrorists funded and supported by the Soviet Union and Red China. They built it up with ox wagons. In just a few years, they built magnificent cities, tough, hardworking people. This is Bulawayo, just 6 years after the Rhodesians moved in here. This is what they built up with ox wagons. Without any British aid, they built the Victoria Falls Bridge. Extraordinary achievements. The British South Africa Police, one of the most efficient, non-corrupt police forces ever seen in Africa. An independent republic, not a colony. Mugabe was never a liberator either. He never liberated anyone. Mugabe waged a brutal terrorist war against black civilians, against white farmers, against Christian missionaries, and against Red Cross hospital and ambulance workers. Mugabe never liberated anyone. I defy anyone to tell me one single individual that ever got liberated by Mugabe. Mugabe was a Marxist terrorist, a dictator, and a corrupt blood diamond criminal. Missionaries and nuns of a Catholic church murdered on the road. Red Cross ambulance workers machine gunned by ZANU-PF. The testimony of 13 Elam missionaries, well, 9 missionaries and 4 of their children, 13 people all from Britain, pacifist Pentecostal British missionaries, the Elam mission station, murdered on order of Robert Mugabe. Why? Because they were so nice. They helped everyone. They didn't have guards, they didn't have dogs, they didn't have wire, they didn't have fences, they had nothing. They're on the border of Mozambique. Any terrorists that came past, they gave them medicine, food, whatever they wanted. They were generous, they were thoughtful. Mugabe specifically ordered these people murdered because they undermined the work of the commissar who was telling everyone that the missionaries are there to enslave the people. And everyone said, no, but look at these Elam missionaries in Britain. They, you know, they're our friends. And so they all got murdered, right down to the baby who got thrown up and down on a bayonet. Black Christians in Zimbabwe were herded into churches and burned down on top of them by order of Mugabe. Pastors, headmen, chiefs, shot, tortured. This man had his ears and lips cut off by order of Robert Mugabe because he didn't listen to Commissar and he spoke against the communists. This woman had her lips cut off and was forced to cook and eat her own lips because she had spoken against the communists. This is the liberator, the guerrilla hero, icon of liberation, war hero, who dedicated his life to empowering and emancipating the people of Zimbabwe, according to people like Cyril Ramaphosa. Unbelievable. And it didn't stop when he was in power. He had tens of thousands of Matabele Christians murdered with their hands tied behind their back in Matabele land. This man, bayoneted in the back by the Chinese pick sticker, fold-out bayonet that you get, especially with the SKS rifles, something like 18 or so bayonet wounds in his back. One wasn't enough. William Spring documented the long fields just in the first few years of independence on the killing fields of Matabele land under Mugabe's Gokurahundi, North Korean trained 5th Brigade. And then there's Blood Diamonds. You all should know about Blood Diamonds. There's a film on it, and there's a lot of interest on Blood Diamonds. And you normally think Liberia and Sierra Leone. Bloodstones, because, you know, nothing says I love you more than a blood diamond. People have their hands and their arms cut off by these thugs, making the people, people like Charles Taylor, who, by the way, was an American. Now, Charles Taylor, who was tried for war crimes at The Hague, International Court of Justice and so on, for his blood diamond regime that he is running in Liberia, you might be interested to know that the Americans started Liberia to resettle freed slaves from America. And that's why they've actually got the capital as Monrovia, named after the American president at the time, Monroe, who gave the Monroe Doctrine. Well, what most people don't know is that the American Negroes who moved back there were never more than 10% of the population. And they exploited, colonized, oppressed, massacred the indigenous black people, treat them like slaves. In fact, according to the Constitution, you couldn't even vote unless you were a Negro of American descent. A black African didn't have any rights in Nigeria, in Liberia, to get elected or to be president or, for that matter, member of parliament, whatever it was. And Charles Taylor ran this place like he was a Bronx gangster. And Charles Taylor did a lot of atrocities with these sort of criminals and thugs. Well, interestingly enough, he got arrested. And he got taken to The Hague for trial, and here he is, dressed like a businessman here. And in this trial, lo and behold, who should turn up to testify against him? But Naomi Campbell. Is that the correct name? Naomi Campbell. She's apparently a very famous model. Anyway, she said she was a guest of Nelson Mandela in Cape Town at Groote Schuur. That's the Prime Minister's residence built by Cecil Rhodes. And she was a guest of Nelson Mandela, who also had Charles Taylor there. This is while Charles Taylor was dictator in Liberia and was chopping off people's hands and arms and so on for propagating his blood diamonds. You know, you've got to do what he wants, produce the diamonds, or we chop off hands and limbs and things like that. And she was given, for whatever reason, a handful of uncut diamonds, doubtless blood diamonds, by Charles Taylor. Full handful. She didn't know what to do with it, wasn't sure what would happen if she turned up at the airport, what would they do in Heathrow if they found him. So she gave all of these diamonds to Nelson Mandela and said this is a donation to the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. Now, she's testifying this at the International Court of Justice in The Hague, which is very interesting because when journalists did investigation, they found there's no evidence in the books or receipts or anything like that of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund of a donation of diamonds or any financial equivalent from Nelson Mandela. So what did Nelson Mandela do with this handful of blood diamonds from Naomi Campbell, who got them direct from Charles Taylor, the Blood Diamond King, this American gangster who is running Liberia as his own personal little concentration camp? Now, if this had happened to Donald Trump, for example, do you think that might be a scandal? But somehow or another, Mandela could just let millions in diamonds disappear and not help Children's Fund, and you sort of wonder what the story was. Anyway, that's Naomi Taylor's testimony before the International Court of Justice. I would not know anything more than what was reported there. Do you know where your diamonds came from? Well, Mugabe has ended up in the last decade and a half of being the biggest blood diamond king in the world. Mereng Diamond Fields. He personally benefited over $15 billion, that's US dollars, from blood diamonds. Now, he did probably use some of them to buy Chinese tanks, Chinese jet aircraft. China, after all, is interested in raping Africa of everything it's got. And so, at the moment, of course we know, diamonds come from the DRC, from Botswana and South Africa. A little bit in Ghana and Angola, Namibia, but Zimbabwe's not even on the map in this particular map because this is before 2008. 2008, Zimbabwe discovers blood diamonds. And so the whole trade of blood diamonds, you can see here how Guinea, Mali, Sierra Leone, Liberia, all wrapped up in it as well, and so on. Well, Zimbabwe's blood diamonds have never been banned by the Kimberley Process because according to the Kimberley Process, a blood diamond is something produced by a terrorist or guerrilla group. But if it's by government, even if that is a terrorist government, it's a government representing the UN, it's not a blood diamond. So the one quarter of all the world's diamonds at the moment are coming from Zimbabwe since 2008. The Mereng Diamond Fields are that rich a diamond field. Gee, if only Cecil Rhodes had known how right he was that there would be diamonds up in Rhodesia. And he was right. They just didn't find them until 2008. And Kimberley Process refuses to ban Zimbabwe's blood diamonds because they certify them as conflict-free because the people doing the chopping off of hands and machine gunning of the people and so on are legitimate government, according to the UN. And so Zimbabwe's blood diamond fields, Mereng, which is just south of Matari, is the richest diamond fields in the world at this moment since 2008. But do you think any of that revenue has ended up in the Zimbabwe General Treasury coffers to help the people suffering in Zimbabwe, living the lowest life expectancy on the planet, according to the World Health Organization? Nope, not at all. So the Mereng Diamond Fields is a place of real horror. When they first were discovered, in came the local people prospecting. They quickly got their hands cut off. They got arrested. They got machine gunned. Helicopter gunships came in, shot them up. In came the Zimbabwe Presidential Guard, and they either killed or enslaved them. And these people then had to work for the Zimbabwe government. In fact, it wasn't Zimbabwe government, it was the Zimbabwe Presidential Guard who ran the whole show. And these people are effectively slaves for the blood diamonds of Mugabe. And if any of them found, just hide any of them or keep it to themselves, they'll chop off their hands. And these are some of the pictures smuggled out of the Mereng diamond fields in Zimbabwe. And this is hideous. The amount of people who died there, these are makeshift graves there. This is one of the great human rights scandals of our time. And yet, do the media care about this? No, they're worried about something that ended 200 years ago. That slave trade, don't worry about the slave trade going on today. And Mugabe is the one working this whole system. So these are some of the blood diamonds coming in. They say a person working the mine will get about $20 for that. That's the Zimbabwe dollars, which isn't worth much. And, of course, out of it, you can get tamfos. And that's a lot of money right there. Ian Smiley has documented blood on the stone, greed, corruption, and war in the global diamond trade. Devastating work exposing the whole blood diamond trade. And Mereng Diamond Fields is one of the biggest producers in the world today, and it goes to Lebanon, to Dubai, and India, where they do the cutting. Of course, De Beers mine diamonds would go to Amsterdam and Netherlands and be cut there. So, here you've got the sudden riches where they said Robert Mugabe has got $15 billion from this. Not that he's benefited his people. Now, how dare someone like Cyril Ramaphosa say he is dedicated to empowering and emancipating the people of Zimbabwe? Serve the people of Zimbabwe. Liberate the people of Zimbabwe. That's a total lie. Mugabe now, well, before he died, owned the Zimbabwe Consolidated Diamond Company, which allowed Red China to strip the country of its natural assets. Red Chinese aircraft would fly straight out. Antonov 126s, the biggest aircraft on the planet. These massive planes would come into Mereng diamond fields where they built the Chinese built an airstrip without customs, without going through Harare, just fly straight to China with diamonds. Now, Mugabe obviously got things out of it, but the government of Zimbabwe had no say in what China was doing. Of course, they gave them tanks and jet aircraft and so on, but basically, China's allowed to rape Zimbabwe, and doubtless Mugabe and ZANU-PF top people get paid off for it. Harry Truman said, "You cannot get rich in politics unless you're a crook." How can anybody like Ramaphosa be a billionaire in politics? How can anybody like Mugabe be a billionaire when he's got the poorest country on the planet? Mobutu Sese Seko was once being interviewed by a journalist who said, "How is it possible that you're the fifth richest person in the world, and yet your country is the sixth poorest country in the world?" And he said, "I'm the fourth richest person in the world," which was the man's point, actually. How can you get rich in politics unless you're a crook? Now, having said that, when Harry Truman, not my favorite politician at all, I don't like him one little bit, for many reasons, including that he dropped the atom bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki and that he fired a great war hero like General Douglas MacArthur. Nevertheless, this quote is a good quote. When he finished his term of office as President of America, he walked to the station in Washington, D.C., got on a train, and took the train back home. No bodyguards, no entourage. That was it. Ian Smith cycled to work. I met Ian Smith many a times. Over 20 years, I saw him several times a year, at least once a year for 20 years, for lunches, suppers, teas, and radio interviews and so on. And he never had a bodyguard. He never had an entourage. He never had a special car. He didn't have any security. His home didn't even have security. Front gates were wide open. Really talking about his home in Harare, his farm, or staying with his daughter down in Half Bay. No security whatsoever. A man who lived fearlessly. And while he was prime minister, he was still a farmer. And he lived a humble life and never owned much at all. But these poor people are the ones who meant to have been emancipated and enriched and empowered by Robert Mugabe. Police investigate the theft of $15 billion. Leave us alone. What do you think they might be talking about here on the streets? People in Zimbabwe know exactly what Mugabe was. His communist corruption certainly inspired the ANC struggle. Ramaphosa said that he's an inspiration for ANC. Well, I'm sure he is an inspiration for the ANC state capture, gangster state looting of a country through and through, right? Looting like the country is a trough for them. Mugabe's tactics of distracting attention from his government's failures and atrocities by making scapegoats of the small white minority has also doubtless inspired the ANC and their tactics by promising free land. This also has inspired the disastrous ANC policy of expropriation without compensation, EWC. But the Western media, like Associated Press, have insulted the intelligence of the readers and viewers with misleading reports. This is how the Zimbabwe government treats their people. And you're meant to think that Mugabe is a liberator. Former Zimbabwean leader, this is an AP report, former Zimbabwean leader, Robert Mugabe, an ex-guerrilla chief, who took power when the African country shook off white minority rule and presided for decades while economic turmoil and human rights violations eroded its early promise, has died in Singapore. Now, what a deceptive piece of disinformation and garbage. AP writers Farah Mutsaka and Christoph Torchika claimed Mugabe enjoyed strong support from Zimbabwe's people. Well, I'm sure when you're being beaten by the local police like this, you're going to do whatever they ask you to do. How can any journalist be so ill-informed, so dishonest, as to lie so blatantly? No, Mugabe did not enjoy popular support. Millions of Zimbabweans celebrate his fall from power. Did anyone here notice what Thabo Mbeki, who just came out of his silence for this Mugabe fest in Durban City Hall, Thabo Mbeki stated, "It's not true that the people opposed Mugabe. Not one person supported his removal from power. Not one person in Zimbabwe supported Mugabe's fall from power." Well, this is the Daily News, the only independent newspaper in Zimbabwe at the time when it was blown up while a police stood by laughing. Are these people supporting Mugabe or are they against Mugabe? Mugabe, shame on you. Are these supporters? Mugabe must go. Not one single person wanted Mugabe to be removed from power. Here's a woman about to get beaten senseless by the police on her knees. And, she doubtless supports Mugabe too. Mugabe must go now. Now, they don't really mean this. They're actually supporting Mugabe, we presume. Mugabe must go. Under fire, Mugabe cornered. The people of Zimbabwe want Mugabe to go. Not one single person in Zimbabwe wanted Mugabe to be removed from power. Mugabe out. And these are people demonstrating for Mugabe to leave. Not one single person in Zimbabwe wanted Mugabe to leave, said Thabo Mbeki. How can one take a man like Thabo Mbeki seriously? Well, he takes himself seriously. Arrogant Mugabe disregards ZANU-PF. ZANU-PF acts falls on Grace Guy and ZANU-PF and all this. These are people dancing outside the parliament of Zimbabwe when they heard that Mugabe had been removed from power. And thank you, Jesus. you know the memes that came out because of Mugabe falling, and so next thing you've got some photoshops showing now the police chasing him out. And a hippo chasing him out. I think these are all wishful thinking photoshops. This is definitely fake photos. But it shows you where people were thinking. Thank you, ZDF. Yours truly, Zimbabwe. That's because they'd removed Mugabe from power. Robert Mugabe names for streets, went into garbage cans. People were celebrating for days and nights over the removal of Mugabe from power. Now, another point of fact. Mugabe was never a guerrilla, let alone a guerrilla leader. Mugabe had the popular ZANLA guerrilla leader Josiah Tongara murdered on the 26th of December 1979 so that he, Mugabe, could lead ZANU. Mugabe is a politician. He is never a soldier. He wasn't even a guerrilla or insurgent. I don't think he even knew how to handle a firearm. In fact, as Ian Smith said, he's never heard a shot fired in anger. I mean, Robert Mugabe is a nothing, nobody. He was just a politico. Robert Mugabe had the very popular Josiah Magama Tongagara, the commander of the ZANLA guerrilla army, assassinated 26 December 1979. Just like Samora Machel had the founder of FRELIMO, the very popular Eduardo Manlani, assassinated so that he could come to power. Just like Stalin had Leon Trotsky axed, literally. Many had expected Tongaigora to be the first president of Zimbabwe with Robert Mugabe, the head of ZANU's political wing, as maybe as prime minister. But the strategic removal of Tongaigora left the path to the presidency open for Mugabe. Just like, and this isn't my theory, this is what Winnie Mandela, to a dying day, and General Bantu Halimisa to this day maintain, that the assassination of Chris Hani in South Africa, the very popular, charismatic, well-spoken head of the Southern Communist Party, that he is assassinated as an inside job by the ANC, just as blamed on this Polish chap, who was either patsy or maybe wasn't even involved. But it was an inside job. And in fact, I think that Bantu Halimisa and Winnie Mandela could be right in this, because without Chris Hani being removed, Thabo Mbeki and Jacob Zuma wouldn't have a snowball's chance in hell of seeing the presidency. Because Chris Hani was vastly more popular, vastly better spoken, a more charismatic leader than Mandela or any of the others. And so Mandela, as he was the icon in prison, who was going to be the first president, he would have been the first president, but Chris Hani would have been the vice president, and then he would have been the successor in 1999. But because he is removed, door was open for this absolutely bland, boring, mindless drone, Thabo Mbeki, to become president. And of course, this weird character, Jacob Zuma. But Chris Hani would have been it, just like Tongaigora would have been it, just like Trotsky was actually the natural leader to follow Lenin. But Stalin, who came from nowhere, ex-bank robber, managed to remove him and seize the power. This is just like 1984, just like Animal Farm, George Orwell. A snowball is the one who does the revolution, but Napoleon comes and has him chased out by the dogs representing the KGB and killed, so that he, who had nothing to do with the actual revolution, can now take over. And he rewrites history that he's the hero of the revolution. So don't forget, Josiah Tongaigora was murdered by Mugabe. Who killed Josiah Tongaigora? 30 years in the events, 30 years of killing our people. Who killed Josiah Tongaigora? Mugabe, keeping Zimbabwe tired since 1980. Now, this is the sort of protest you see in Zimbabwe. This is, in a dictatorship, that's pretty courageous to put up that kind of protest. Nor did Mugabe take power. He didn't take power. You think he's storming the parliament or something? No. He didn't take power. It was handed to him on a plate by British Governor Lord Soames, son-in-law of Winston Churchill. After a very flawed so-called election, where all agreed that in terms of the Lancaster House Agreement, Mugabe ZANU should have been disqualified for the systematic intimidation, or should we call it terrorism, which is the correct word, of the voters, and the flagrant violations of the court and electoral code of conduct. Robert Mugabe will be remembered as the Marxist who was propelled into power by Jimmy Carter's State Department and the British Foreign Office in violation of the Lancaster House Agreement of 1979. All these people, from Lord Carrington, who was proven later to be a KGB agent of influence, was at that stage British Foreign Office Secretary, and signed by Bishop Muzarewa, who was the Prime Minister of Rhodesia at that time, Robert Mugabe, Joshua Nkomo, and so on. So this was sworn agreement, and the British government guaranteeing this agreement. Lord Arthur Christopher Soames, son-in-law of Winston Churchill, British-appointed governor of Rhodesia during the transition period, was responsible to ensure free and fair elections in accordance with Lancaster's agreement, which meant all military forces of all sides confined to barracks. Only British police and so on there to supervise and this, that, and the other. And everything's going to be free and fair elections. No military activity whatsoever. Well, ZANU PF was murdering people by the hundreds during the electoral process. They had tens of thousands of their guerrillas all over the place. They never were confined to base. They should have been disqualified. Now, of course, his father-in-law, Winston Churchill, helped betray 150 million Christians behind the Iron Curtain by the Yalta Agreement to Joseph Stalin, the worst mass-murdering thug and dictator in the history of the world. So his son-in-law at least was following in his very questionable steps. But whilst Lord Soames acknowledged that Mugabe's ZANU-PF was engaged in widespread systematic violations and terrorism, intimidating the voters. He refused to dismiss the obviously fraudulent votes in favor of Mugabe, which meant that it's like this. You're in the Olympics. You're not allowed to take drugs, but one guy takes performance-enhancing drugs. You've got to stick to the track. This chap runs across the track. And while he's about it, he's tripping up other people. He's spiked other people's drinks. He's shooting some of the people who he's competing against, trips up others, but he gets to stand on the number one and gets the gold medal. I mean, could that happen? Well, it shouldn't, because that's exactly how Lord Soames ran the elections there. The people who followed the rules were the losers, and the one who broke all the rules was pronounced the duly elected person. In blatant violation of the Lancaster's Agreement, Soames handed over the government of Rhodesia to Marxist mass-murdering thug and dictator Mugabe, who just killed his own military commander, and has disqualified terrorist movement with all the disastrous consequences. As Ian Smith declared, we were never beaten by our enemies. We were betrayed by our friends. The terrorists never beat the Rhodesian army in the field. They didn't win a skirmish. Forget about a battle. In fact, you know, we can celebrate victories. All they can celebrate is defeats. They've got the Chomoyo massacre. They've got the Sonoya massacre. They've all times that they got defeated by the Rhodesians. But they don't have a victory to celebrate because they didn't have any victories. And here's Lord Soames, son-in-law of Winston Churchill, and Prince Charles, handing over the jewel of Rhodesia to this mass-murdering communist thug who's in the pay of the Chinese at that very moment. Most importantly, Mugabe was not an innocent victim of economic turmoil and human rights violations, which undermined his rule. Mugabe was the prime human agent responsible for the socialist policies which destroyed the robust economy inherited from Rhodesia. Mugabe initiated the communist revolution that violated human rights, including the Gukurahundi massacres. Gukurahundi was the driving rain, the storm, the rainstorm that washes away the filth. That's what Gukurahundi means in Shona. Where tens of thousands of civilians in Matabeleland were murdered. The chaotic farm invasions, the blood diamond wars in the Congo, Zimbabwe's own blood diamond scandals in the Mereng diamond fields southeast of Zimbabwe since 2008. Mugabe mobilized his North Korean-trained 5th Brigade to conduct wholesale massacres in Matabeleland from 1983 to 1984. The term Gukurahundi, the early rain which washes away the chaff or the filth before the spring rains, Mugabe is from the majority Shona tribe and the Matabele are from the minority tribe. The Matabele are descendants of the Zulus. In fact, Matabele is very close to Zulu. Tens of thousands of Matabele civilians were brutally massacred by Mugabe's ZANU-PF 5th Brigade. Disused mine shafts like Antelope Mine and Attica Mine were used for dumping many of the bodies of murdered Matabele down the mine shafts. These are some excavations of mass graves later. Researchers such as Dr. Stuart Doran documented that Robert Mugabe ordered the Gukurahundi killings to remove and suppress political opposition within Matabeleland. This is in order to make possible Mugabe's plans to impose a one-party state in 1985. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. The members of the 5th Brigade were all ZANU-PF party members, drawn from the 3,500 ZANLA troops at Tongagara Assembly Point, named after Josiah Tongagara, the ZANLA commander who had been murdered by Mugabe. The agreement between North Korea and Mugabe for the training of the 5th Brigade was signed at this table and ceremony. Here's some of these 5th Brigade chaps showing some North Korean type of karate expertise and breaking some unreinforced bricks. And here's the Gukurahundi Brigade. And this Colonel Perrins Shiri, who is wearing British-provided uniform, by the way, because the British military assistance team was training this creep, amongst others, too, while they were getting ready for murdering all the Matabele. They were all distinguished by red berets, not that they knew how to parachute. The young men in Matabeleland were all considered potential dissidents and were summarily detained or executed. Most were shot in front of their families or fellow villagers in public executions after being forced to dig their own graves. Sometimes groups of all ages, including women and children, were shot, like at Lopani on the banks of the Sewela River, when 62 were massacred. We know of this massacre because 7 victims survived despite severe gunshot wounds and identified the place later. On numerous occasions, large numbers of people were herded into huts and burned alive. This was done, for example, in Shola Cholo. The 5th Brigade would routinely round up hundreds of civilians, march them to a central place like a school, where they'd be forced to sing Shona songs praising ZANU while they were being beaten with sticks and whips. These gatherings usually ended up with public executions, which could be the local chief or someone chosen at random, or the pastor. The Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace in Zimbabwe produced a document breaking the silence with 2,000 names of known Matabele victims of the Gokorahundi. In February 1983, the International Red Cross produced documentation of 1,200 Matabeles that they knew of murdered in just that month alone. In 2005, the International Association of Genocide Scholars estimated the death toll in Matabeleland at least at 20,000 that they had names for. Movin Mackay, defense minister in 1992, became the first ZANU official to acknowledge the execution torture of civilians by the 5th Brigade. In 1997, the former defense minister, Enosh Nkala, described his involvement with the Gokorahundi as eternal hell, and he blamed President Mugabe for orchestrating it. These are the presidential guard. Those yellow berets are their distinguishing mark. Even Robert Mugabe, speaking at Joshua Nkomo's memorial service, 2nd of July 2000, admitted that thousands had been killed during the Gokorahundi campaign. The Bible says we to hate evil and love good and establish justice and gate. Praising a mass-murdering thug and Marxist dictator doesn't establish justice. At independence, so-called, in 1980, Mugabe declared to Newsweek, "We are not going to make the same mistakes as the rest of black Africa has made. We're going to learn from their mistakes." Yep, Mugabe actually said that. It's hard to think of what he learned, except how to lie, steal, cheat, and murder. What mistakes or crimes did Mugabe fail to implement? Mugabe's true legacy of corruption, brutality, starvation, and disease. Starvation, disease, corruption, brutality, these were the hallmarks of Mugabe's Marxist ZANU in Zimbabwe. Hospitals ran out of medicine. Shops ran out of food. Fuel stations ran out of petrol. Banks ran out of money. Water failed to flow through the pipes. Electricity, power failures became the norm. As they said to me in Zimbabwe, "In South Africa, you have power failures. In Zimbabwe, we sometimes get electricity." Tuberculosis, HIV, cholera, and malaria spread like wildfire. Zimbabwe's cholera epidemic reached 10 times, that's 1,000%, the African average, according to the World Health Organization. Zimbabwean life expectancy under Mugabe plummeted from over 60 years in 1980, to 37 years for men and 34 years for women by 2006, the lowest in the world, according to the World Health Organization. Now, bear in mind that the life expectancy in 1980 was, as we were coming out of a war, a 15-year war, our life expectancy was virtually double what it was under peace with foreign aid later. Yet despite his disastrous track record, Mugabe was elected President of the Southern African Development Community, SADC, Chairman of the African Union, the AU, and UN Goodwill Ambassador for the World Health Organization. Who? How can you take any of these organizations seriously? These are the same people who elected Idi Amin is their chairman too, mind you, while he is massacring people in Uganda. The intense suffering of the people of Zimbabwe apparently didn't matter to the AU, the UN, SADC, or CNN, or the BBC for that matter. They're hypocrites. They claim to care for the people of Zimbabwe, but they don't care about the people in Zimbabwe. Now, this all sounds like a bizarre Monty Python comic satire. I mean, look at this. This way up. Honestly. They didn't even think to remove the "this way up" cargo sticker. And aren't these the same military who ousted him in a coup less than 2 years ago? Isn't this pretty blatant hypocrisy? They're all putting on their best, and all those look like Western, British-style, Rhodesian-type uniforms anyway. Don't they have their own? Whatever happened to his hatred of colonialism? But he's wearing several rows suits, and he's got his army entirely with military traditions that come from the Rhodesians. The lunatics are running the asylum. If this was part of a scripted plot in a fiction book or film, it would be dismissed as unbelievable. I mean, who would ever believe such bizarre script as this? I mean, even the way how they are positioning themselves with the rifles down, the bayonets, and the same army that ousted the dictator in a coup are honoring him being returned as cargo from Singapore. And again, the question is, why was he in Singapore? Mnangagwa. Glass coffins. The fact that Mugabe died in a hospital in Singapore is most revealing. This tells you almost everything you need to know about him. Mugabe and his destructive socialist policies that so destroyed the once advanced, excellent hospitals built up by Rhodesia, he had to fly to a previous British colony, Singapore, where free enterprise provides better healthcare than any socialist state. Why did Mugabe not go to a Zimbabwe hospital? I think we know the answer to that. He'd ruin them. Why didn't he go to a communist state? Or at least to an African hospital? Why did he come to a South African hospital? He used to come to South African hospitals, but then he was afraid there's so many Zimbabweans there, one of them would kill him. So he's too afraid to come to a hospital in South Africa because there might be a Zimbabwean working in the hospital who would kill him. So why did he have to go to Singapore, far away in Asia? Why didn't he go to North Korea or China? No. He says he hates capitalism, but he doesn't trust his health care to a socialist hospital. What an indictment on the catastrophic communist failure of Mugabe and ZANU. Now, this is what someone else posted. Mugabe died in Glen Eagles Hospital in Singapore. He had an executive suite there for 150 days. The cost per night is 80,500 rand per night. And he stayed there 150 days. So this Pan-African, to quote Ramaphosa, cost Zimbabweans 12 million rand. Because Zimbabwe had to pay for it, even though he has 15 billion personal. Which is, kids are now trying to divide up amongst themselves. It should be returned to the people it was stolen from. But anyway, you ruin your own state's healthcare, but spend 12 million on your own. I mean, how's that for selfishness? Yet, as they once praised Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong, and Fidel Castro, the BBC gushed with ridiculous praise for Mugabe, how he broadened access to healthcare and education for the black majority. Are there no genuine investigative journalists left at the BBC? No wonder friends in Britain called the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, or the Bias Broadcasting Corporation. As anyone who's actually lived in Zimbabwe could testify, Mugabe's thugs loot hospitals, close hospitals, burn schools, beat up teachers, kidnap and brutalize students, and close schools. And the BBC wants to praise him for having broadening access to healthcare and medicine for the black majority. This is what the hospital grounds look like. Not even grass to sit on. The healthcare and the education center are vastly better for black people in Rhodesia than it ever has been in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe became a failed state under Mugabe, lowering life expectancy to almost half that of Rhodesia and taking a country with the lowest unemployment in Africa, under 4%, to the highest, 95% unemployment. And that was after half the population fled the country. So Rhodesia, with total economic sanctions and at war, had higher life expectancy, higher standards, export food and so on. But now Mugabe, with no war and with foreign aid, he couldn't keep it together. How disgusting is that? You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Hate evil, love good, and establish justice in the gates. As these people say, Zimbabwe is open for oppression, not for business. See, Mnangagwa speaks about Zimbabwe is open for business. Not really. Mugabe blasphemously boasted he had beaten Jesus Christ by rising from the dead more times than Christ had only risen from dead once. Can you imagine? This is because several hope springs eternal in the amount of people who had predicted that, oh, Mugabe's died, and you know, each time you could say, not really. So that's why he is making the stupid boast in 2013 that he'd beaten Christ, who's only raised from dead once, and I've been raised many times. Well, now he can explain himself to the Creator directly. When justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to evildoers. It is a fearful thing to fall in the hands of a living God. You'll recall when Mugabe fell, Zimbabwe celebrated. And as I say, today, as Mugabe dies, a nation mourns. When when Morgan Tsvangirai, the head of the opposition, who'd actually, as I said, Zimbabwe is the one country in the world where the opposition got more votes than the government. And he did. He won the 2008 election straight, but he still was not allowed to take power even after he'd won elections. When Morgan Tsvangirai died, the country genuinely wept and mourned. I don't know how much mourning there's been for Mugabe. I saw a video of the stadium packed. Well, the stadium was meant to be packed, so the stadium was mostly empty for the Mugabe coffin viewing and what have you. In Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, Parliament was the scene of unprecedented jubilation when the Speaker of the House read Robert Mugabe's resignation letter. The House erupted in cheers and singing and dancing and clapping and celebrations, with members of Parliament leaping up and jumping on the chairs and tables, flinging their arms high above their head, shouting with joy and exuberance. Does this look like the people were sad to see Mugabe go? Does this look like they're really mourning him now? The hypocrisy of the whole thing. And then you have someone like Thabo Mbeki saying he enjoyed unprecedented support amongst people of Zimbabwe and not one person wanted him removed from power. The atmosphere was electric throughout the country as people by the hundreds of thousands poured in the streets to cheer and shout and dance and sing at the news. There's extraordinary scenes of people dancing, car horns blaring, flags waving with jubilation, singing in the streets. They have never seen such exuberation like this. I mean, this was akin to South Africa winning the World Cup rugby in 1995. Tuesday, 21 November, will be remembered and celebrated for a very long time in Zimbabwe as the day in which Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe finally gave in to decades of protest and pressure to force him to give up his despotic rule. At that time, he is 93 years old. He's died at 95. Mugabe was the oldest, longest-running dictator still in power in the world. For 37 years, the people of Zimbabwe were brutalized, terrorized, and oppressed by his Marxist ZANU-PF reign of terror. This is in what used to be Jamison Avenue. This is now called Samora Machel Avenue. Boot on the neck. Police armed with AK-47s with helmets whipping the people on the ground. Now, earlier that month at a ZANU-PF rally in Bulawayo, the capital of Matabeleland, Mugabe aggravated the Matabele people by speaking to them in Shona. His wife, Grace Mugabe, often called Graceless or Gucci Grace, because of her exorbitant lavish lifestyle, was heckled by the people chanting at her, "You know nothing," and singing a Matabele song, which translates, "Do we hate what you do?" Grace responded to the crowd, "I don't care, I am powerful. Even if I become vice president, is anything wrong with that?" The people continued singing, "We hate what you do," which is a popular song, but they're obviously directing it at her. The visibly incensed Robert Mugabe poured out his wrath on his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, the crocodile, publicly threatening to fire him. "If I made a mistake by appointing Mnangagwa, tell me, I'll drop him as early as tomorrow. We're not afraid of anyone. We can decide even here," Mugabe roared. Mugabe was openly booed by many in the crowd of Matabele in Bulawayo. And when Mugabe followed this up by actually sacking his vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, this provoked the Zimbabwe Defense Force to swing into action. They weren't protecting the people of Zimbabwe. They were protecting themselves from getting Grace or Graceless Mugabe as the next president. So on the 14th of November 2017, armed personnel carriers rumbled into Harare. By the way, our news reports on SATV said tanks were rumbling in. Those are not tanks. Those are armed personnel carriers. That just shows you our journalists don't even know the difference. The prisoner was taken to what the military called protective custody. The ZDF secured the public broadcast to other strategic points, and the commander said they're targeting criminals around Mugabe who are committing crimes that are causing social and economic suffering in the country to bring them to justice. Now, this is all caused by the power struggle, and it marked the end of the political ambitions of 52-year-old Grace Mugabe. It's the high-profile firing of the Vice President Mnangagwa and the purging of party loyalists who didn't support Grace, and it desire to become vice president, and the next president was the final straw. They weren't actually operating to help the local people. Grace had also been involved in numbers of assaults, including in August 2017 when she lashed a model with a plug in a hotel in South Africa, causing severe damage and injury. But she is allowed to escape justice, claiming diplomatic immunity, which she actually didn't have. She wasn't an ambassador or anything like that. And she was behind the dismissal of many party favorites of ZANU-PF. Mugabe will be remembered for having implemented the disastrous socialist policies, the land invasions, the military adventurism in the Congo, which led to the worst hyperinflation ever seen in history. This is the same building, a flame, and afterwards, that same farm. Ceausescu called Dracula in Romania when he met with Mugabe. Land reform, this is the face of land reform in Zimbabwe. This is the face of his non-racial policies. The targeting of people just because of their race. The destruction of savings, earnings, and pensions was absolutely catastrophic, destroying lifetimes of savings and earnings, making the pensioners absolutely destitute. Yet while it destroyed the livelihood of most Zimbabweans, it made the ZANU-PF elite spectacularly wealthy. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery. And yet we have got Christians like Sherilyn Dudley of the ACDP giving eulogies and praise for Mugabe. And I've heard that even Kenneth Meshe sent some condolences to people of Zimbabwe and speaking as though Mugabe was somewhat a liberator, which is unbelievable. How Christians can do that. Do we not hate what God hates? Mugabe managed to take a country which had been a breadbasket of Africa to a basket case. He turned a paradise of Rhodesia into a hell of Zimbabwe. Rhodesia really was a paradise, a nature paradise, tourist paradise, well-run, efficient, fun country. Where else in the world could you find a giraffe in a swimming pool? A man who was an ethical leader, he didn't steal anything. He rode to work on a bicycle. He was not a man who was interested in accumulating wealth. He was a very simple, straightforward man, a farmer, a pilot, 6 years, fought in the Second World War in the Royal Air Force, Royal Rhodesian Air Force. Rhodesia turned the wilderness into a paradise. Mugabe got all this, and he turned a country which had flourished even under international sanctions in the midst of a vicious war against Soviet and Red Chinese-backed terrorists, and he turned it into a failed state, and that even with massive international foreign aid. How do you do that? And Britain is still spending £2 million per week on aid to Zimbabwe. One of the lies of Mugabe is that his failures are because of sanctions. But it's not true. He's never had sanctions put on Zimbabwe. Sanctions are placed on Mugabe and some of his upper ZANU-PF echelon personally, not in the country. In fact, foreign aid is poured in from Britain and America and South Africa by the billions into this country. So they've been getting foreign aid. Forget about it. They never had sanctions like Rhodesia had. But he's managed to run it off the road, off the bridge, upside down, and the poor people have to carry things. This month special, no fuel. The whole economy is like this. It's overloaded, chaotic, shambles. What did the people have in Zimbabwe before candles? Electricity, exactly. You know. What did you used to drive before ox-drawn carts? Cars. The new Toyota Corolla. Change is not necessarily progress. The people have to be very innovative just to survive over there. How do you get hot water? Where are our 2.2 million jobs that were promised? Which, of course, you know, politicians make all kinds of promises. But under Mugabe, Zimbabwe collapsed into economic chaos. People fleeing the country. With the most obscene opulence and extravagant excesses, Zimbabwe became one of the poorest countries in the world, while Mugabe became one of the richest people in the world. Certainly the richest person in Africa, with a net personal wealth of more than 15 billion. Now, tomorrow I'm going to be taking a guided tour of Rhodes Cottage in Muizenberg. Very humble little cottage. Interesting, Cecil Rhodes was the richest person in Africa at the time. And yet, he put his money into education to the extent that Mandela said, all the education he received, primary school, secondary school, high school, university, all came from Cecil Rhodes's fund, the Rhodes Trust. And it's an interesting thing that, not that I like Cecil Rhodes, I don't think he's a good person, but he's a great person, and he left Cape Town the wealthier with Newlands Forest protected from development, University of Cape Town, Rondebosch Common, Kirstenbosch Gardens, Fortescue Estates, all these sort of things donated. He didn't build them in Kandla and charge to the local people. He didn't even take a salary when he was Prime Minister. But these people, what did Mugabe do to donate to the people of Zimbabwe? He stole from the people of Zimbabwe. While he was dining on giraffe meat and lion meat and elephant meat, his people living in absolute destitute poverty. As far back as 2001, Robert Mugabe's net worth was rated at $1.75 billion, invested in Switzerland, Channel Islands, Bahamas, and even owning castles, plural, in Scotland. It was just one of his estates. And he would have these, while the people were starving, he would have cakes like this with his own picture on top, honestly. At his 90th birthday, he boasted of dining on elephants and lion meat. The obscene extravagance of Mugabe and his wives and his sons is in stark contrast of the destitution of most of the people suffering under his maladministration, to put it nicely. Mugabe described his political ideology as Marxist-Leninism. He was educated at Katuma College and University of Fort Hare, then he worked as a schoolteacher in Rhodesia and Ghana. Mugabe testified was the scholarship he received in 1949 to study at the University of Fort Hare in South Africa that led to his involvement in politics. He joined the African National Congress and was introduced to Marx's ideas by Jewish South African communists, like, I presume, Joe Slovo and co. type of people. He described his time at Fort Hare as the turning point in his life. Fort Hare, by the way, used to be a Presbyterian college, mission college, given to the government, and they turned it into absolute socialist, secular humanist, atheist hellhole. He described his time at Fort Hare as a turning point in his life. He was convicted of sedition, imprisoned between 1964 and 1974, when he earned a master's and four other degrees while he's in prison. Now, I don't think any poor soul in Chikurubi prison in Harare these days gets a chance to study outside. So I don't know why Cheryl Dudley's saying how evil it was for Ian Smith to lock up this mass-murdering thug and criminal dictator in prison there. He was hardly mistreated there. You know, how many of us wouldn't mind getting a free education? Released in 1974, Amnesty moved to Mozambique to oversee ZANU's revolutionary terrorism campaign. By the way, here you can see Tongara, the head of the army, and there's Robert Mugabe. I don't know what this tells you, but yeah, these guys look comfortable in the camouflage and with the ammo and weapons, but this chap, what does he look like? He doesn't even know what a press-up is. He doesn't know what it is to be in the army. This man's, he's not a soldier. For him to be called a guerrilla leader, I don't think they've seen real guerrillas. All elections in Zimbabwe have been dominated by state violence and blatant electoral fraud. Like, these poor people had their arms broken and legs broken because they voted for the MDC in the 2008 elections. Even when defeated, like in 2002, 2008, 2013 presidential elections, Mugabe stayed in power and continued to brutalize and terrorize the population that he claimed to serve. And you have the DA calling him a president. And people speaking about how he was so supported by the people. But you could see on the ground, the support for Mugabe was such that he had to be surrounded by his police all the time. Ian Smith, when his farm was invaded, they asked him for reaction. He said to BBC, "I'm not worried." He says, "I've still got more black friends in Zimbabwe than Mugabe has. I challenge Robert Mugabe, join me in Samora Michelle Avenue without a security. Let's see who gets to the other side of the street alive." That's true. Tsvangirai, Morgan Tsvangirai, was very, very, very popular. Tsvangirai. And Morgan Tsvangirai had these massive rallies, and you could just see he had support. Well, he won the elections. I mean, there's no doubt. And the frustration is, poor people, how many times for 37 years they thought that their vote would count? But no, there was all kinds of intimidation, all kinds of... These are 2008 kinds of, you know, you won't believe it, but the dog's eaten election results. And all these sort of things. And let's say, he knocks world opinion out of the court with his blood-stained baseball bat. Vote until you get it right. And vote for me or die. Why so subtle? Zimbabwean democracy pierced through the heart by Vote Mugabe. When he had the second election after he lost, he bludgeoned the people of ZANU, of MDC, to the point that they pulled out. Just not cricket, as the British put it. Well, they had given him the country. And here's his presidential brigade, that presidential guard are the ones who run the Marang diamond fields. "How long will the land lie parched and the grass in every field be withered because those who live in it are wicked, their birds and animals have perished? Robert Guest, the African editor of The Economist, observed in his book, The Shackled Continent, for half a century now, the continent's been deluged with foreign aid. But this aid has failed to make Africa any less poor. It has bankrolled tyrants or idealists with hopeless economic policies. Both types of aid have been wasted. Doing business in Africa can be tricky. Bad roads, punctured by roadblocks, manned by bribe-hungry policemen, make it slow and costly to move goods even short distances. Local firms, meanwhile, have been held back by arbitrary local government regulations, dysfunctional legal systems, that's a good term, dysfunctional legal systems, and the difficulty, without political connections, of raising capital. If Africa was better governed, it would be richer. Africans are poor, largely because they're not yet free. That's a fact. They live under predatory, incompetent governments which impoverish them in many ways through corruption, through bad economic policies, and sometimes, as in Zimbabwe, by creating an atmosphere of terror. Robert Guest, economist from Britain, he's nailed it in The Shackled Continent. They promise them freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity. It's not just Zuma, it's a whole bunch of them. And, of course, Mugabe was kept there by his corrupt ZANU-PF group, waiting for judgment, but judgment is coming. And this is some of the timeline leading to what they thought would be freedom. And they thought this would be their liberator, Emmerson Mnangagwa, but new face, same tyranny. I've been asked, have you shared the gospel with Mugabe? Yes, I have. By letter, I've written to him directly. And one of our board members, Bishop Bwanali Ferry, met with and prayed with Robert Mugabe and presented him with a gift of the Bible while he was present in State House in Harare. We cannot anticipate too much change in policy, as Mnangagwa was a loyal Mugabe henchman until very recently. He's been complicit in all the crimes of Mugabe's ZANU-PF gangsters of the last 39 years. Those who think only Mugabe's been the problem don't understand the insidious role of communism. It's not Mugabe. It's the whole communist system. After Vladimir Lenin, there was Joseph Stalin. After Joseph Stalin, there was Khrushchev. After Khrushchev, there was Brezhnev. After Brezhnev, there was Chernenko, Andropov, Gorbachev. And even under Gorbachev, 1 million Christians were in the concentration camps. 5 million concentration camps, 1 million were there for religious offense alone. Under Gorbachev, during perestroika and glasnost. Mugabe's just one of many Marxist mass-murdering thugs available to ZANU-PF. Deliver me, O my God, out of the hand of the wicked, out of the hand of the unrighteous and cruel man. Freedom requires the eradication of communism and corruption. Although the regime governing Zimbabwe will try to make it appear that freedom has come with the death of Mugabe to entice investment so that they can overtax and later confiscate, things are still bound to continue to deteriorate until the people of Zimbabwe rise up to overthrow the whole corrupt communist structure and uproot the destructive ideology, socialism, secular humanism, Marxism, which has permeated and poisoned the country. Destructive forces are at work in the city. Threats and lies never leave its streets. However, the masses of people have turned out in the hundreds of thousands to celebrate the downfall of Robert Mugabe and now his death, are desperate for hope and they're desperate for real change. We need to continue to pray and work for biblical reformation and spiritual revival, because when justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous but terror to evildoers. Our mission, Frontline Fellowship, has been dedicated to missionary work in Zimbabwe since 1982. I've driven from one side to the other of the country, ministered to their soldiers, Birchenhof Bridge, right through to Matari, been locked up by 3rd Brigade, interrogated by CIO, ministered to these people. For over 38 years, our mission has been distributing Bibles and Bible teaching materials, conducting leadership training seminars, evangelism workshops, every kind of outreach, distribution of food, boxes of love, ministering in schools, prisons and hospitals, and the streets and the marketplace, seeking to lay solid biblical foundations for long-term biblical reformation, warning the people that the problem is not just Mugabe, and the problem is not just ZANU-PF. The entire country needs to repent and needs to turn to God. And so from this mission house, we have been driving long and far and wide, taking these boxes with love. Since 1982, we've been putting together boxes with love and every year delivering, sometimes multiple times in a year, a simple resource like these in literature to make life a little easier for the pensioners in particular, the destitute pensioners, and to help some pastors and prisoners as well. with these books with love. So this is just one of the love and action parts of the mission. Leadership training, literature distribution, and love and action. Those are the three main L's of the work. And so we can't do everything, but we can do something. And we've got to do everything we possibly can to help the people in Zimbabwe at this desperate time. The poverty, the suffering, it's just unbelievable. And so we know Zimbabwe, and we care for the people of Zimbabwe, and we love the people of Zimbabwe. And I'm outraged that you can get Christians falling over themselves to praise a Marxist dictator who has abused the people, who's been a persecutor of the church, who's been an enemy of Christ, and that they somehow think that who they're going to please. And instead of following examples like Zimbabwe, how about following examples of excellence like Singapore, where they actually, that's the kind of place where they produce the hospitals where Mugabe wanted to go. He didn't want to go to his own hospitals. The Bible maintains capital punishment for murder, rape, and kidnapping. Believers are to pray imprecatory psalms of justice against the wicked. God will ensure justice in eternity. Mugabe may not have faced justice on earth, but he will face justice at the hand of God. For I, the Lord, love justice, I hate robbery. And Mugabe is certainly a robber. We're in the middle of a world war of worldviews. A battle for the mind, a battle for the heart, a battle for the future, and the choices before us are clear. We can choose the lies of the world or the truth of God's word, indoctrination or education, communism or Christianity, the broad road to destruction or the narrow way to life, heaven or hell, the grace of God or the wrath of God. See, I've set before you today life and good, death and evil, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commands, his statutes and his judgments, so that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away so that you do not hear, and are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I announce to you today that you will surely perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land which you cross over the Jordan to go in and possess. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, and I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life so that both you and your descendants may live. Is Jesus Christ your Lord and Savior? If not, he will be your judge. Because it's appointed unto men once to die, and after that, to face judgment. Questions? Comments? Observations? Mo?
I recently took a pastor friend of mine, an elderly man from Zimbabwe, from I took him overseas to Jerusalem. He needed some specialized occupational therapy. And I was shocked to hear that the electricity in Zimbabwe comes on at 10 o'clock at night, and it's on for 5 o'clock in the morning, something like that. His daughter has to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning to set the washing machine to start the washing machine. And that's the truth. I'm getting it firsthand. That's how many hours of electricity they have every day.
I've been told by some people that, in fact, if the electricity comes on, you show the presence wanting to make a statement that he wants you to see on TV. Because most of the time there's no electricity. That's shocking. Any other comments, observations? Aubrey, you've been there fairly recently. What do you think?
Yeah, I just maybe want to comment on the current situation there. That the people don't trust the current president, otherwise they would move back and 2 million Zimbabweans come and tell us how beautiful is their country and how good it's run. So they don't trust the president, at least at this time.
Mnangagwa, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it's hectic to, yeah, it's too sad.
I'm just crazy how, like, my friends and a lot of people like in Tanzania, that just local people like in Congo and other places don't know anything about Zimbabwe, and they speak like how he was the only person who was dedicated to fight the white people, and that's why they basically sanctioned this country, and that's why they had all these economic problems. It's because he tried his best, but
that's such total lies.
Yeah, and they keep on like telling my friends like, no, this is not right, like, this is wrong, and I try to explain, they're like, no, you are wrong because you've never been in Zimbabwe. I'm like, have you guys been in Zimbabwe? They've not been in Zimbabwe either.
No, well, like,
like,
no Zimbabwean would talk like that unless there was ZANU-PF, yeah.
It's crazy, like, there's just all this idea out there that is not true.
Toby, any comments from you? You were in Zimbabwe last year.
It's bad. Yeah, you've shown some of, yeah, there's worse stuff that has happened than what you have shown, but it's really bad. It's like the whole country, all areas of it has just collapsed, and the only parts that are still working is what people are privately trying to keep running. The government or big corporations just cannot survive.
Yeah, and these poor pensioners. It's just staggering.
Actually, maybe I can tell a story of a pensioner. His name is Johnny Young. Johnny, I forgot his, but his name anyway is Johnny. I don't know his surname now. But we, there was other American missionary with me, Daniel DeVilliers. Maybe some of you know him. He's a very lively chap. So anyway, we said we're going to see if we can go to a restaurant and eat something. Obviously, want to take Johnny. We know him for, I know him for a few years out. And we sat at the restaurant. We tried to make plans as to, we were low on American dollars and you can't draw money at any place. But you know, you can barter with what you have. I said, Johnny, what would you like in your burger? I said, he said, I just want the egg on my burger. I did not have any eggs for a few years. He said, no, man. Do you want meat, whatever? So it's just, that is the thing for people. They can't even add eggs. He wrote a letter to me and he said he's now in like a retirement village. He said it's so nice. It's the first time in, I think, 5 or 6 years that he has hot water when he's bathing. So yeah. But you know, I must say, one of the most. He's teaching people to mine for gold, but he's also sharing the gospel. And he says all this, the horrible things that have happened and with his family and things, but he's so encouraging. He's sharing the gospel.
Are you done the speech?
For things to share the gospel. I think that is so. There was another Tanim. Actually, I have lots of story. Tanim. I can't remember Tani's name, but she's well in her 80 years. So when Daniel de Villiers came back to Vienna, and she called all the people and said, "Yes, a world-renowned pianist coming to Zimbabwe, you must come and listen." And the Tani, later, she said, "Now let's sing hymns." The Tani shaking, she said, "My fingers can't play the piano, but we must at least sing some hymns." We sing maybe 7 or 8. Maybe 10 hymns. We just sang. She called the people and we sang it together. So, you know, I've realized although they are poor in positions they have, they're rich in Jesus Christ. Because, you know, the position in God has not changed. And I hope our country, our white people, our people that serve in God to realize that. You know, although they take our farms from us, they take our land from us, they cannot take God from us. We will have Him forever. That's the hope that they have, and I hope we can learn from them.
Yeah. He generally seems to be very hated. I do employ Zimbabweans. Almost 100% of the people I've come to know that have a very high work ethic, and he's just roundly hated. And the white friends that I have, eventually they were just forced to leave, just lost absolutely everything, literally stolen from under their feet.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt in my mind that he was an extremely wicked and evil man.
What bothers me is that if we're going to praise him or even just be polite, you betray the Christians of Zimbabwe, you betray the people of Zimbabwe, you betray the victims of communism and the people who continue to suffer there. And you also tell people outside of Africa, don't ever trust Africa. You can't trust what you say, you can't trust what you do. You cannot trust Africa for investment or tourism or anything, because if Africa can praise a thug like Mugabe, who tears up agreements, whose promises mean nothing, people's rights mean nothing, the law means nothing, he even had the Supreme Court justice beaten up in his chambers by his mob. and kicked up. When the Supreme Court just found against him on several occasions, he just fired them, brought in someone else, often getting beaten up in their chambers. Journalists got beaten up, the radio station got blown up, newspapers, the only independent newspaper, got blown up when they opposed him, and his police were just standing around laughing while it happened. Nothing ever happened to the people who caused this. Imagine that even a Supreme Court justice can get beaten up because he found against the president on some point, minor point, minor. And if we can praise him, it means there's no hope for Africa. None. If we, and I think the people who are praising Mugabe are racist and cowards, because what they're saying is, if a white man had done 1% as bad as Mugabe, he'd be damned to hell. But because he's black, we don't expect better. We don't expect black people to have a high standard. We don't expect them to produce anyone better than a Mugabe. And therefore, it's racist to praise a man like that. If you can praise someone who's such a failure and disaster and so malicious and so selfish, that means there's absolutely no hope for you. I mean, how can you trust someone? Because a person like that's either complete and utter coward or complete and utter liar or absolutely evil. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So to me, because I believe the people of Africa deserve better and the people of Zimbabwe deserve better and everyone's held to the same standard, and I'm darned if I'm going to praise someone who's an enemy of God and a blasphemer and a Marxist. It doesn't matter what color he is. We do not support Marxists and murderers. Simple. And so what do I say to the Kenneth Meshews and the Sherilyn Dudleys of this world, who Christians who praise them? I know they're not stupid, but I fear they're cowards. And this is not a time for us to be cowardly. We've got to make a stand and say, this is unacceptable. We cannot. This is not just some minor official. This is the top leader for 37 years of Zimbabwe. And if we can't condemn this, then honestly we have no standards at all. So to me, if somebody says I have been racist in criticizing Mugabe, I'd say no. Racism is when you've got different standards. I want to hold Mugabe the same standard I hold anyone else to, which is God's law. So shame on the people. You can't say that a dictator is a dictator and a Marxist blasphemer is a Marxist blasphemer. Just imagine what we will have to say when we face God and the scriptures. We'll have to give an account for every word we've ever spoken. If I praise the enemies of God, who wants to be on the other side? Remember, it was well put by Ronald Reagan. He says, we do not have the right to ask if God's on our side, but we should ask, are we on his? That actually is the right attitude, because God's not on our side, but we've got to be on his side. You know, who's on the Lord's side, as Moses said. So.
But I think we can say the same like Jesus said about Jesus, you know, it would have been better for him if he was never born. And I think, why don't they, I don't think there are true Christians, honestly, people that say he's a hero, but why don't they say that?
Well, cowardice is pretty epidemic right now. We're living in an age of apostasy, so we've got to assume the best, but we've got to call people back to repentance. There is forgiveness on the other side of repentance, but it's unbelievable that Christian leaders can be so cowardly or lacking in discernment as to join the throng. I mean, we saw it with the Mandela worship, we've seen it with the Martin Luther King worship, Winston Churchill and all these other characters. It's a lot of people who don't deserve praise from Christians. We've got a higher standard in that. But this is about as extreme as I've come across in my life. This must be one of the most evil people on the planet that's lived during our lifetimes. And to think that you've got Christians praising them, right? I don't expect the Marxists to do anything else. But for us, let's give a very clear statement. So I'll just put on the table some of our older newsletters in Zimbabwe, which is very historic, like Zimbabwe, A Lesson, How to Destroy Christian Civilization, Zimbabwe Mission, Mugabe Tsunami in Zimbabwe. And the 2008 one over there, you can see, yes, that's a Christian action. Zimbabweans reject Mugabe. That's another historic one. That's when Tsvangirai, without question, won the election. As I said, the only opposition in Africa where the opposition got more votes than the government. And then at this one, we've got, at the back of this more recent newsletter,
we've got on Zimbabwe celebrating as Mugabe Falls, which is a whole a tremendous expose on what's going on there. So these are some historic ones. And then notes from tonight's presentation is the text printed out there as well, if you want those. So, of course, we're going to upload this video and audio, so that this is something you can share and have people challenge with the other side. I wouldn't have thought that we needed to say a lot of these things. A lot of what I said should be so obvious. But unfortunately, because we're living in so much disinformation, and if we've got spineless media out there singing his praises, just the BBC could say he broadened access to healthcare and education in Zimbabwe. There was a time I thought the BBC was a good news service, but those days are so long far gone. What a bunch of propagandists.
When we were in Zimbabwe in a rural area, they had the flask. We have a photo somewhere of it, and a picture of Robert Mugabe on top of the picture. Mugabe keeping you warm. So it's obviously likes himself a lot.
Yeah. It's funny, the latest information that I got about this and everything, saying that the problem in Zimbabwe right now is not his fault. It's because he was tried his best. So the world kind of forced him into this corner that forced Zimbabwe into this corner of poverty. They blocked everything around him and whatever.
By giving him foreign aid, by the millions.
And it's crazy, that's what's going out there, saying that if Zimbabwe is in trouble today, it's not Mugabe's fault. Yeah. Try this best, but the world blocked everything around him.
And yet, they took hundreds of thousands of tons of free food into Zimbabwe to help them. And in many cases, the food grown in Zambia, for example, that came back to the people in Zimbabwe, were grown by Zimbabwean farmers who'd been kicked out and were now in Zambia. And so people recognize the names even. But these are the farmers who we kicked out, and they provided the food for us in our store. It's unbelievable. Nobody gave Rhodesia anything free, ever. And Rhodesia, nobody starved Rhodesia, ever, during a war. This chap gets foreign aid. And he still wrecks everything.
It's even worse than that. It's not just that they bring food in. When we took food in, they want to confiscate all the food we have because you're not allowed to take it in.
That's true. I've forgotten it. And they want to charge you tax on bringing in food aid one time, and then by the time you take it, they want to completely confiscate it. So, yes, it's even worse than the fact that they're needing to live on charity. They even want to steal the charity and not let it get to the people. This is the problem. You see, you could believe most of what they're saying if we weren't a mission that works in Zimbabwe. But when you work in Zimbabwe and you've got Zimbabwe friends and you know what's going on there, this is all just unbelievable. But I suppose a person who's got no personal contact with Zimbabwe or Zimbabwe might believe this.
I want to tell a story that really happened. The police pull you off and they want cash. They must pay on the spot. You can just tell them, hey, you don't have cash. And then what can they do? Now they have a card machine along next to the road, so you can pay with your card at the police store. So they are so crooked.
So I tell you what, from the earliest days, I've always been corrupt. But since 1982, I knew they're going to ask me for bribes at every roadblock, everywhere. So when I was leaving Brightbridge, at Nasina, which is about, 12 kilometers from the border, go past the bakery first thing in the morning, load up with lots and lots and lots and lots of loaves of bread, every place piled up in your... And so you open the window and there's this beautiful smell of fresh bread. Oh, would you like a loaf? And it's beaming and, no money chaser. I was just handing out loaves, fresh loaves of bread all the way. And these people are just so happy. And that's just one of the tactics we've used to get through.
In 2015, when David Tsu got two fines, one of them, we were with the long wheelbase bucky, and said just two people can sit in front, so we were three people in front, so that's fine. And then they stopped us again, we got another fine for a passenger sitting next to the driver. Yeah. That's not allowed in the country.
They're getting creative. Yeah. Because in many cases, they're not being paid. They're expected to get their money from fines.
Yeah. You cannot argue with them. They have a book with all the rules in, and they pull out the book and show you in the book. So
Who even worked?
Well, of course, you're going to go to jail. Jail. You want to go to jail. Yeah.
Well, I found at Roadblocks, the first thing is you start conversation with them, you give them things like, you know. Oh, the other thing I did in the 80s, they all wanted bribes. So at that stage, you could get at, I forget the place where it was, there's one is up in Joburg areas, you could get for under 2 rand these digital watches. This is a digital watch. So I buy 12, 20 times. You get discount for getting a lot. And so I you know, not even take my own watch, and I just have one of these on there. So, but if people think, yeah, well, you take your own watch and then you give them the watch and put it away happy and put it in the next place. And so I was giving watches away at these robots. and they were really, really inexpensive. When I mentioned this to Bill Batten, he said, oh, he did the same thing with calculators, because when calculators came out in the West, nobody in Eastern Europe had them. So he'd have these calculators and men would say, you know, it's going to cost you this or that. Put on this calculator and then he'd see this chap's eyes widen. He said, oh, would you like this? And give him the calculator. Because he's got a lot of others. These calculators were cheap. You know. Anyway, you've got to get crafty to just get through roadblocks in Africa. It's a major problem. You've got to find out what they want and then use that. Yeah. So. And our people, and the thing is, we can work out the solutions now, but the next trip, the rules may have changed, and you've got to work out a whole lot of new things in the field. Mm. So, Chubby knows, don't you? Every border post, every roadblock, you need ingenuity and wisdom from the Lord.